This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. We're going to do a little history now. Some really uncomfortable history, actually, about slavery. The economic realities of slavery and how the conventional wisdom about one of the many ways that slave economy affects this country to this day is wrong. There's a book out this week. It hasn't gotten a whole lot of attention so far, but it talks about a sometimes overlooked part of our economic history. The book is called Accounting for Slavery by historian Caitlin Rosenthal. And in it, she argues that some of the management practices used in corporate America today, long thought to have been popularized in the factories of the industrialized North, were actually far more widespread on the plantations of the American South. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams spent some time with Caitlin Rosenthal at Thomas Jefferson's plantation, Monticello.
Even on the rainiest of summer days, Monticello is still busy, with hundreds of tourists wandering the expansive grounds and gardens of Jefferson's plantation in central Virginia. Caitlin Rosenthal, under an umbrella, views the rain as kind of perfect.
Account books always begin with the weather. Often it's raining and people are still in the fields. I mean, it's really wet, but it's not torrential, so people are probably still working.
The people she's talking about were slaves, or more accurately, people enslaved by plantation owners like Thomas Jefferson. Rosenthal is an assistant professor of history at UC Berkeley. She spent the last decade digging through plantation account books from the 1700s and 1800s, studying how slavery worked. Even after spending so much time immersed in those details, she still finds it jarring every time she visits a plantation. We start, along with some tourists, on Monticello's Mulberry Row, the former site of the plantation's many workshops, where the weaving, woodworking, and smithing were done.
What is that?
A bellows.
Rosenthal says slaves would have operated those bellows in the reconstructed blacksmith shop. They did most of the skilled work here.
So thinking about enslaved people as capital meant that if you trained them as blacksmiths or something like that, you might increase their value to you.
And slaveholders tracked their human assets with a level of detail similar to what you see in modern accounting techniques, adjusting values upward as children grew into working adults and learned new skills.
But then also on the backside, keeping track of their depreciation in value as they grow older, if they're injured. And these relatively sophisticated valuations even extend to people sometimes receiving a negative value.
Negative because the cost to slaveholders of keeping the person alive was greater than the profit their labor could produce. We follow a gravel walkway from Mulberry Row and up the hill towards Jefferson's home. As we walk, the part of the estate where the workshops and slave quarters once stood slowly disappears below the sightline. From the patio just off Jefferson's library, the view is sweeping and beautiful, mountains and valleys. The disconnect between the slaveholder and his property is intentional.
So this is just like my experience being in the space, is just to remind yourself of the extent of the power imbalances that are everywhere.
Jefferson's library, think of it as the corner office of the plantation, contains hundreds of leather-bound volumes, many of them accounting ledgers and farm records. Nia Bates is public historian of slavery and African-American life at Monticello. She says Jefferson kept meticulous accounts.
He would write nuclear family groups together, so that's helped us with the genealogical research. He would write out their rations, so we're able to know what they're getting.
And this is how historians have traditionally used these records, to examine the lives of the slaves. At Monticello, they're being used to inform a new series of exhibits that more accurately depicts the lives of those enslaved there. But Bates says these records also tell the story of the business of the plantation.
Monticello was an economic enterprise, and that's how Jefferson was making the majority of his money. So the labor of enslaved people here is really the economic basis of Jefferson's wealth.
Caitlin Rosenthal says the cotton plantations further south and the sugar plantations in the Caribbean were even more advanced than Monticello. Their records reminded Rosenthal of spreadsheets she used in her previous job as a management consultant, advising companies on how to improve productivity.
In some cases, innovation was a byproduct of bondage. Planters were making really sophisticated business decisions about, of course, this most horrifying and totally commodified human body.
decisions based on what we think of today as data, handwritten in neat columns. Food allowed, rest allowed, working conditions, pounds of cotton picked or sugar harvested, human value tracked right alongside the value of livestock.
There was this idea that if you just found the right data and brought the right tools, that you could increase output. And this is like the core idea that I think you find management consultants taking to businesses today.
But unlike businesses of today, slaveholders had complete control over workers' lives and limitless power to experiment with different methods to increase productivity.
One of the most harrowing would have been punishing slaves who fall short.
In ways that are familiar, yet remain deeply disturbing, like whipping.
Like for every pound they fell short of a target, they might receive one lash. So each incremental pound is incentivized by that little bit of violence.
Some slaveholders used less violent incentives, even rewards, more food, extra clothing.
There are even cases where planters apparently ran contests where they would offer a prize because planters were trying to use every bit of that labor potential from child to adult.
Rosenthal says the account books also reveal stories of resistance, slaves working more slowly or hiding their true abilities. But she says those stories are nearly buried under the weight of the human toll documented in the thousands of yellowed plantation records that still exist. One set of records in particular has stayed with her. They detailed the value of children. Two of those children had the same names as Rosenthal's young son and daughter, Edward and Eliza.
To look at that list and see the values attached to their names and the fact that I get to have no prices attached to my kids is like an incredible and privilege that none of these people had.
Children, according to one accounting formula, should be valued at $25 at birth, $75 at their first birthday, add $25 a year until they turn 10, and from there, the market price. At Monticello, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.